Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is season 2, episode 27, where we're talking about training that actually changes behavior. I'm joined once again by Amber Saville. How are we doing, Amber?
I'm good, thank you. Really excited to be here again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had a really interesting session. What were some of the highlights for you?
I think talking about the different ways to deliver training, how to make it a bit more exciting, a bit more fun, where to look to base your training off of as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. We kind of broke down the components of what makes good training, what makes good trainer, and how to trickle that down into the business in a way that actually positively changes the way that they work and approach data protection. But, you know, we won't give too much away, and we'll let you jump right into the session, and we hope you enjoy.
If you've been listening to Data Protection Made Easy for a while, you'll know that we go deep on the topics that actually matter, whether it's SARs, ROPAs, or international transfers.
And one of the things we hear all the time is, where do I go to learn more? Where is the training that matches this level of detail?
Well, we've got an answer for that. Data Protection People is launching its e-learning platform on Monday, the 13th of July.
And courses were built around the exact topics we cover on this podcast, only in the self-paced format you can work through in your own time.
It's affordable, online, and available from day one. Head to dataprotectionpeople.com/training courses to find out more. Welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Hi, I'm Kane. I'm joined today by Amber again. Second appearance, is it? Or third appearance?
Second
appearance. So maybe becoming a bit of a stayer. Well, you come back, which is a good thing. If you do want to disappear, maybe it's maybe me and Kate are doing something wrong. But you're back. Hopefully excited to do another session.
Always.
Well, that's always good to hear. Before we do get started, again, just a few housekeeping bits I'm sure all you guys will know. We do record these sessions, of course, to publish on things like social media, Spotify, YouTube, the likes. We'll be capturing, obviously, audio and video. Obviously Spotify is only doing audio, but YouTube will be doing the video. So if you do sort of choose to get involved or unmute yourself, of course you have your rights in relation to that, which is in the privacy notice that Eve has attached into the chat. And then again, the same thing with the AI chatbots. If Eve finds them, she'll be removing them from the session as we go, you know, just due from community feedback. But on that note, we're going to get into the session, sort of kind of briefly ask a little bit about your week first, Amber, of course, to not be impolite. But we're talking about training that makes a difference and that teaches and changes real behaviours, which, you know, is probably quite akin and quite similar to some stuff that we spoke about quite recently and is, of course, a very important topic. But before we get started, Amber, how has your week been? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I've been poorly for the most part of it, so things are starting to look up, thankfully, but it's been all right. It's been a very busy week. Had a bit of annual leave and then was poorly, so it's just like catching up game.
That was a bit of Monday annual leave. Was that a preemptive booking of annual leave in the event of England being in the final?
It was, yeah.
So you're a bit disappointed. Oh, did you put it to use still?
Yeah, definitely.
But it
weekend.
Oh, that's positive.
I had the Thursday off and the Monday off, so at least I had
nice stretched out weekend. Yeah, you can't really complain with that, can you? Yeah, Thursday would have been for the semis as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So it's very well planned out. I'm sure there were a few people who probably did quite a lot of the same. My week's been a bit bitty as well. I've been doing some training this week, which I'll probably talk about when we jump into the topic a little bit more. That was quite fun. That was interesting. A little bit of stuff on the stairs. It was a really nice engaging session. Other than that, it's been loads and loads of just different stuff coming in. You know, usually on support we deal with the same kind of stuff that I'm kind of sort of QAing and working on the team with, but been a range of different stuff this week, which is fantastic. It's nice to get a little bit of a, you know, bit of a difference in the work that they're doing. And obviously it's the school holidays now. So one, I get a nicer journey into work, which is always nice. Apparently not back from work. I don't know what's happened there. But getting back to work has become more difficult and it's irking me slightly. So that's always good. And it's a bit of an interesting time in terms of work for us, because anytime I'm kind of reaching out and trying to engage with people, so many out of offices, you know, I'm not jealous at all that I'm just sat here still in the office whilst you guys are, I'm sure, probably somewhere very lovely. And if you are, you're probably not here, so I don't know why I'm addressing my conversation to you. But if you're listening back, I do hope you are somewhere nice. But before we jump into the session, we'll have a little touch on the news as always, and then we'll jump into a little bit and pieces on training. There are two bits in the news really that I wanted to talk about. They are, I think, both, you know, relatively important. I'll speak firstly on some of the news in relation to Andy Burnham. As you guys will know, obviously Andy Burnham is the new Prime Minister in the UK. And alongside it, we've had a few news pieces that are, you know, slightly referenced data protection in some regard. I don't know if you may be part of these discussions, Amber, but I'm sure you've kind of seen, other than on the podcast, about the new sort of digital ID bill that they were trying to push forward in with the UK government at the moment. It looks like, or seemingly, there's something that Andy Burnham is looking to scrap or park for the time being, at the very least, whilst he is focusing on things that he thinks, that he said would be more impactful to most individuals at this point in time. Which is a good or bad thing, depending on your view on it. I don't know if you had any views on the digital ID elements, Amber. I don't know if it's something that you've had much of a discussion about or a look into.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, isn't it? It has its pros and its cons. I think to me, it all seems very 1984. If anyone's read that, it's a brilliant book. But yeah, it seems to be that if it is implemented, you sort of have to think, is it going to be used in the right way? Ultimately, it kind of inevitably will lead to a lot of monitoring and, a lot of function creep.
Yeah, I mean, seemingly that it was looking to be something that, you know, was a cause for concern for people in the compliance space and just members of the public in general. And they were worried to what degree these IDs might be rolled out. Obviously, there was a huge sort of security concern from the perspective of the sort of sensitivity of this data that we may well have to have as part of this ID, which is then kind of centralized all in one place. You know, there's bound to be a little bit of an eye on that, isn't there? So that was interesting, but it does seem like it has been maybe not potentially scrapped, but at least parked for the time being. He does say he wants to focus on other things that are more important, which may mean it becomes importance at some point in time, but I think a lot of the keys now are in relation to cost of living and stuff like that at the moment. But I guess we will see as Andy Burnham's tenure continues. But you know, an interesting one from the data protection side. There was one more piece of news that I wanted to have a little chat about, and it's about ChatGPT, our good old friend ChatGPT, and it's talking about some of its OpenAI models, or specifically its advanced models, went rogue and hacked a startup after losing its control, or the sort of maker losing its control of it during some security testing. So an agent was operating with human instruction within a sandbox, and they were sort of testing it in what was perceived to be a controlled environment. But what had happened is that it had found a weakness as the AI agent, and it was basically able to escape the testing limits. It got outside of that testing barrier, and effectively went rogue and begun to almost kind of break in and have a cyber attack on this small startup of a business, you know, outside of instruction once it's identified that weakness. OpenAI itself has obviously said that the incident was unprecedented. And was conducting conducting an investigation, basically saying and trying to figure out how it's acted so autonomously. It is slightly concerning, isn't it? I mean, I think it's been often, especially in recent weeks and months, that we've seen in the news of certain AI softwares and tools being able to interact and identify so many cyber weaknesses, especially on smaller websites and smaller scale businesses. And it's acting obviously independently, it seems, in some respects. I think it's taking a prompt and took it to the extreme. But that that is concerning, isn't it? I think it's a little bit of a cause to be a little bit worried, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's funny how they've said it's unprecedented. And then I suppose in the space of AI, everything is unprecedented. That's
well, how do you predict for these things? But, you know, if I was using AI and we're thinking about our smarts, surely people must be thinking, oh, what if it, you know, surely that is a risk that you do think about. What if it does go rogue? That, to me, you know, maybe I read too much sci-fi and stuff, but that would be the first thing that would come to my head is, oh, what if the AI went rogue and did something else? How do we stop that from happening?
It's not like there's any films about it or anything.
Well, exactly. You know, they've got nothing to grab from in terms of experience today. But
and it's agentic AI after all. So the whole point is that it acts autonomously, and they're somehow surprised that as Moore's law dictates.
It's acted more autonomously. Yes. It's worrying, isn't it? And I know that you do quite a lot of work in relation to sort of AI and stuff, and that, you know, you spent a lot of time with our consultants and some of our guys on support in sort of furthering, you know, people's sort of knowledge and experience with AI. Is there, you know, not to put you on the spot, I guess, but is there anything that you think that, especially in the UK, in regards to what we have that we need to start doing in relation to AI, we think the government might start doing in relation to AI? Because, of course, they've said that innovation is going to be a big thing that the ICO is focused on, and this new chair of boards as well, and you know, presumably AI is going to form quite a large part of that, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately we need regulation, and in order to have regulation, you kind of need something codified. So if we're taking anything from the EU, we need to sort of look towards having our own EU AI Act, having, you know, ISO 42001, is it?
Yes.
Things like that in place, and ultimately what will lead nicely into our session training as well, making people aware of how it works. And I mean, I know a fair bit about AI, but even for me, it's so complex, it's so confusing.
It just keeps going, doesn't it?
So you know? Much going on, like, yeah.
It's a rabbit.
Like a human brain, you know, the neural networks of an AI system, it's a lot.
No, it is a lot. And I, you know, I think it panics a few people, and, you know, a few people are wary of it. A few people are not maybe as wary as they should be. And I think a lot of it is maybe not from misinformation, but maybe from the lack of information and really proper governance from, you know, public figures and authorities that they're really lacking in the UK. I know that they've said specifically that the UK wants to be one of the leading sort of nations on artificial intelligence and its governance, but something has to give, and you know, when you start moving with that, and hopefully it will. Obviously, we have these principles at, you know, face value kind of thing, but it's still a little bit like the Wild West, isn't it, in businesses at the moment?
Yeah, I think we just need to embrace it, really. I think for so long we've been trying to fight sort of the rise of AI, try to discourage it, try not to sort of bring it into businesses, and we've sort of acted quite ignorantly towards it. And I think at some stage maybe it was stoppable, but I think at this point we all recognise it, we all use it.
I don't see anybody taking a backwards step now. You know,
it's fully enforced. Like, I think we just need to make sure that the right safeguards are in place. So rather than just trying to limit its use, almost just regulate it more.
Yeah, well, that's what it needs, doesn't it? And I mean, and I think in doing that, it will limit some of its capabilities and its uses, and make something and make things hopefully a little less risky. But an AI can tend to really be for businesses as risky as you make it as a business. Obviously, whilst we don't have things in respect to AI in terms of proper act and proper well-structured guidance, you know, an organization can still take these matters into their own hands, you know, and as we're going to be alluding to in the session, if you train properly, if you can keep relevant people accountable, and if you can really monitor and take a risk-based approach to the use of this AI, it can be a fantastic tool for your business in making sure that it isn't creating any unnecessary risks, you know, really simple stuff, you know, not putting sensitive data into AI relating to your customers. You know, it's always a nice one, making sure that there is a policy that someone has ownership over and they're able to actually deal with that. I mean, the difficulty is that people go along their own way, and people see with procurement all the time is that all of a sudden, as a DPO, someone's coming to you with 10 new AI tools that they think is going to be revolutionary for their service, and maybe will be. But then, you know, the DPO is kind of there scrambling potentially in some cases, trying to figure out how to make this all work, which can be quite difficult. You know, you've got to satisfy a business need whilst worrying about compliance, which is a, you know, a little bit of a difficult game sometimes, isn't it?
As I think also technical measures is something that we overlook quite a lot, because especially looking at the case with this AI sandbox and vulnerabilities within it, making sure we sort of have our technical layers one step ahead of the AI, and also human oversight, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell you what, let's jump right into the session of training, because I think we're kind of teetering onto there. So it's best that we just go all for it, I reckon. So I'll probably start with a question posed and work backwards from there. As opposed to asking what you think is good training and right training, what do you think, or maybe what examples you might have seen is maybe poor training? What do you think is training that maybe is something that organisations or people in general need to sort of relook at?
I suppose poor training for me is where organisations will design training and it may be very well researched, it may be perfect in terms of their theoretical sense, but it's not tailored. It's just aimed at the whole organisation. And don't get me wrong, in some cases I think that can work if, like, potentially you're a smaller organisation or it's very specialised, but for the bigger the companies, those with lots of different departments, ultimately if you're delivering training that's very broad and it's aimed at everyone, yeah, it might be a quick sort of one job fix, but it's not going to resonate with people. People aren't going to take it on board. They might be bored, they might not listen because it's not specific to them. I found that tailoring it to different departments and different scenarios and sort of bringing some sort of personal element in really makes people think, especially if you sort of relate it back to like individuals and their home life and how it might affect them in a personal sense and how, you know, they're a data subject as well. I think it really then ties in and makes it feel a bit more like understandable.
Yeah. I mean, I guess kind of making training that is interactive and engaging is obviously the point that you make, and I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, you can be the best kind of DPO, you can have the most kind of knowledge, or whoever you are, whoever is creating this training, you can have any kind of knowledge to any end, but I know even from experience for myself that I don't think I could possibly, you know, look at 40-50 slides about a data protection topic without, you know, maybe even getting a little bit bored myself. You know, really text heavy stuff, it's very theoretical, it's very legal, that can scare people away. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to welcome people in and we're trying to force conversation. As I was saying, I did a little bit of training myself on Wednesday about STAS. And I think STAS is a really good one to make engaging training. It's great for engaging training because you get to work with so many different, you know, if you have STAS champions, which are who I was working with specifically, you really have the opportunity to, you know, give them a little bit of a say and a little bit of know-how over how they think STAS will work for them, because I think a lot of people are going to interpret the NHF guidance and the stuff from the actual standard slightly differently, and it's going to apply slightly differently for each org, and it gives them an opportunity to, you know, we had a bunch of really good conversations about refusals on that 18-hour time period of staff time. And we had a little chat about other elements in relation to certain kind of data, and like that would typically maybe would be within scope, but there may be a few reasons why we may look to maybe withhold that. And it's all about making, you know, the stuff hit home, and it will hit home if it feels like, one, it's going to have an impact on their job and their work, and two, they kind of understand the inherent benefit, you know, understanding that the STAS is there to help people and to build trust and to be transparent, and, you know, also that having a really good publication scheme may mean that you're actually dealing with a lot less requests for information. That to them may make them more inclined to listen, to understand, because they want to build the best publication scheme they can, so they don't have to, you know, be scrambling for these requests for information in April next year. And that was a good experience for me. You know, I've kind of always trained, I guess, part of being a consultancy, especially for you, Amber, as a consultant, a little bit of what you do is quite educative, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think particularly because you work sort of like one-on-one with people, a lot of the time it's, you almost need to educate people in order for them to understand like the importance of it or for them to want to do it.
For sure.
Which I appreciate, you know, in some cases I think people get a DPO because they need one, because it's a tick box, and I completely get that. But I think sometimes there's, I don't know, it's quite nice to almost help people have the same passion for it that I have, because
yeah.
I appreciate it is boring. And I will say to people, data protection is boring. Most people will have that general consensus.
Yeah, that's my easing. Yeah, that's usually what I say to people. If I know that they're not a data protection officer, so no, I appreciate that. You know, maybe what I'm talking about might be a little bit boring to you. I'm going to try and change that because I don't think it's boring. And maybe if they still find it boring afterwards, at least we can still try and work to sort of contain that. You know, and I think that's the key. And I think you're right. It's very... The word for it, I guess, is being a consultant can be... you're in a position where you have to be very interactive with people, and you kind of work and build people. What I've noticed, you know, I've worked at DPP a long time, and the consultants and other people who've been at DPP for a while, you can see them build this relationship with their customers that they've had for ages. You know, if we take Kate, for example, who's been a consultant for maybe like 3 years, you know, some of her customers she's worked with as they've just started jobs in data protection, never really worked in it before, and they built themselves up to be, you know, really, really capable and great. And obviously that's very comforting from our side. That's exactly what we want to do. We want to build, you know, other people up as well as, you know, the business. But there's an element of, you know, engagement that is needed for these kind of things. Sorry, I didn't know if someone was going to mention. So I did hear someone, but I don't know if they were. No, maybe not. Good luck. Well, what I was going to talk about a little bit now then is discussing some elements about trainer, not just the training, but obviously the trainer in a lot of instances is going to fall on the responsibility of a very likely a DPO, especially for data protection training. I don't know if there will be other individuals who might be involved obviously in the training, but typically you guys are going to be the ones doing the annual refreshers on data protection training. It's going to be you. What I think to that is, I think you need to be a certain kind of person as a DPO, you know, potentially to make training something that is engaging. But not only to that, but to Vaughan's point as well. I absolutely get your point, Vaughan, and it's very nice to hear from you because it has been a while. You know, people can feel the phrasing of these e-learning platforms, which is very, very focused on what the regulations say, the purposes of the laws, as opposed to maybe sometimes the, you know, going teeth into the principles, going into data breaches, and into all these elements. And quite frankly, Vaughan, I've seen a lot of e-learning in my time, and a lot of it I find really hard to comprehend for the purpose of these people. It doesn't fulfill a purpose that they need a lot of the time. And it does feel quite tick-boxy, unless people have seen some really good ones, which, if that is the case, you know, point them in my direction, I'd definitely be happy to, you know, have a look. Because I'm always keen to see what we can do as well at DPP to improve those elements. But also knowing that you are the person to go to, the DPO is a warm and engaging person, I think is really quite important. I can't remember if it's Phil who had a story about he knew a DPO he used to go around with like a big wooden ruler and used to like a teacher, like smack the table if they saw someone doing something that they shouldn't do. I might have completely made that up, but that does sound like a story I have heard from Phil. I don't know if anybody who's listened back to the podcast for a while might remember that, because I remember hearing it on the podcast. And it's just, you know, I think a DPO or the trainer in this instance, the training is only going to be as good as they are warm and engaging and make individuals understand that they are there to help them and actually what they're there to help them with, so they don't get inundated with basically everything, which is usually the way it is.
I also think sometimes hosting these sessions in person is a lot easier in terms of being able to engage with people, but also people feeling comfortable to come to you and ask you maybe what they think is a silly question. And also just being able to deliver it almost conversationally, because I agree a lot of the e-learning I see is very legal jargon heavy, and it doesn't need to be. Data protection is quite simple when you look at it just based on the principles. Mm-hmm. And ultimately that's all most people need to know, which I think is why it's so important to sort of base it on role level rather than delivering sort of a company-wide data protection training, although in some instances it does work.
Yeah.
Do you need to sort of deliver those principles or data breaches, for example, to the whole organization? But if you do sort of do it as a role-based, or...
How would you segment that? Because I know how I would in terms of maybe the tiers, but what in your mind, like, if we're thinking, okay, these different roles might need different level of training, is there any specific roles that you're really targeting more than others, or?
Yeah, I suppose it depends on responsibilities, because I suppose that varies across organisations, but generally it tends to be like the senior management team would have segregated sort of training, all employees. And then I suppose depends who generally deals with, for example, breaches, or who might be doing the more administrative side of things, building the ROPA.
But yeah, no, fair. No, I completely get your point. I mean, there are certain functions, as we know, that deal with personal data in a much different way than others. You know, if you work in IT, if you work in HR, you know, if you are either part of an information governance steering group or you're a data champion, stats champion now, you might have different responsibilities, and then you very likely will in a lot of cases. And, you know, the standard sort of shebang might not work. And I think what I don't always like about this very general sweeping training is that what it tends to do, and what I've read, I went and visited one of my customers and I went through some of their e-learning. It's very fear-mongery, I thought, and I was quite shocked to what degree they were kind of like, you know, putting the fear in people to like not do data breaches, basically saying if you do a data breach, you're going to be fined, you might lose your job. You know, I don't think that's what people want to hear, and I think that's going to make people a lot more worried about the implications and not go to the right people. Yeah. They've got to feel comfortable to raise it in the right channels and feel like they'll be supported. Yes, maybe sometimes a breach may occur and someone may be fined as in the business. And in some instances, obviously people have lost their job, typically where, you know, it's been a very, really significant. And it's about explaining that, you know, maybe sometimes you might accidentally send an email to the wrong person. We are human, we appreciate humans make mistakes inherently, right? You are not gonna be fined 17.5 million by the ICO. You're probably not going to lose your job. Right.
Probably won't even get a warning, to be honest.
Yeah. It's like, but what is important is making sure, okay, if this does happen, you know, you need to know that you need to go to us, you need to communicate with your line manager. Your line manager will go to the DPO. The DPO might need to speak to you. And that is always an educative bit to me as well. I don't think it's always just about training. I think education is also the time spent with people to help them understand an element of the law that is relevant to them and their role. You know, say for example that we've identified maybe that a certain team, when they get SARS, you know, we're missing a lot of deadlines on SARS because the repair team, in this instance, say if we're a housing association, they're not being able to identify these SARS until a couple of weeks have passed and they've followed up. And then like, oh, I need to do something with this. That's not maybe a, you know, we'll wait until the annual yearly refresher training or we'll give them the training again. Maybe I, as the DPO, need to, and I completely see your point, Amber, about getting in and seeing people face to face. I think that's when I feel like I do my best work as well, personally, as a DPO, when I'm face to face with people and really, you know, help them and work them through. This is how we identify SAR, even though they might not say the word SAR. This is what we're looking for. This is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And you know, leave out the, oh, there are these exemptions and you might want to extend it, because they don't care and they don't need to know. And it's about making them feel heard and understood. But you know, also, you know, being a little bit like, you know, we need to step this up. So this is a gap we've identified and we need to work on it, kind of thing.
Ultimately, it's about accountability, though, isn't it? And I always say this is like the overarching principle. I personally feel like as long as the ICO can see that you're not being careless, you're not being sort of negligent, you're trying to maintain that level of accountability, you're looking at things that have maybe gone wrong, you're looking at what you could do better next time, and you're putting things in place to try your best to be compliant with the resources that you have, I think they're always going to look on you more favourably than if you just push things under the carpet and pretend they're not there.
Nope, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, there is an element of ownership and, you know, sometimes quite strictness. As much as you've got to be that a nice person and you want people to come to you, you've also got to make it clear that you know, your job is to monitor those obligations, isn't it? And I really like your point, Vaughan, about the Data Privacy Day. We'd love to do more stuff like that at DPP as well, you know, getting out to people and doing that kind of stuff. We think days like that are really important. I'd be really keen, you know, and you don't have to share if you don't want to, just like what some of these people kind of understood from their perspective of what data protection was to them. You know, I've only really spoke to very limited people about what data protection means to them. You know, some family members, Some friends who work in other kind of jobs, sometimes when I'm doing ropers and stuff, just to kind of get a gauge of what they think. And a lot of the times it's like, oh, bloody GDPR. It's just, you know, definitely when I'm speaking to people who are on the phones a lot, oh, hey, GDPR, I've always got to tell them about the GDPR and this and that. And yeah, I see it as something quite frustrating. So, you know, I'm keen to know. You definitely don't have to share it. But I bet that was a really insightful conversation. I'll leave that there
Can you hear me?
Your hand in that sense, but you know, I think we spoke about training number, and at least we understand, you know, what we need to do to these people when we need to communicate with them, and how. Do you think there are any kind of trip ups with training that people fall into that may, you know, the point of this session is about informing behaviours, but is there any kind of trips that people fall into that maybe would change behaviour in a negative way or not change behaviour at all, do you think?
Well, I think what you mentioned earlier about people sort of leading by fear-mongering can definitely do that, because it sort of pushes people towards being less open and honest about the things that they may be doing wrong or the difficulties they're facing, leading things with sort of jargon-heavy language, because ultimately people don't want to seem like they don't understand, or that, you know, they don't want to be perceived as perhaps stupid, even though I absolutely don't think that's the case, because the language they use in the GDPR itself is just a bit extensive, isn't it? It's not needed. It doesn't need to be that complex. Mm. Ultimately, that's why you have like people like us to sort of translate it. But exactly. I think it's, if you lead it that way, people won't speak up. It needs to be more conversational, I think, and more on a case-by-case basis as well. Like, not every, well, GDPR can't be led just as a whole. It needs to be sort of delineated case-by-case, if that makes sense. So
yeah. I mean, the data protection is quite context-heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's only as good as you can make it contextual. You know, you read the law, and if he was just to follow the letter of exactly what the GDPR said, I think you would really quite struggle to know and implement data protection. I think it would be really quite hard, which is why context is so important. And obviously people like the ICO are so important in some of the guidance that they give, you know, as and when they do give good guidance. And they are there to be a tool as well, you know, not just a tool to DPOs, but a tool of knowledge for other individuals, for members of the public as well, mainly. Now that doesn't mean that we should be telling staff, oh, go read the ICO guide on this, because again, they probably won't. But you know, if they do, there are tools available to them, you know, like the chatbots from the ICO, which I've heard can be hit and miss. But I think when I spoke with Carl Rose recently, he said that they've got them better. But I don't know if that's changed. It's not something I utilize very often in my role, but I do see why it could be important. I mean, when I think of, I guess, not changing behavior, I think the only thing that could potentially lead to further negative behavior is I think, as you're right, Amber, being a bit too heavy-handed in your approach, you know, really cracking down on people in an unnecessary regard, when, you know, maybe it's just a case of re-education that they need, as opposed to reprimand in some instances. It depends to what degree. There's a difference between not knowing and ignorance, and choosing not to know and choosing not to care. And it's about being able to identify that. And can we demonstrate it? You know, I might be able to say that I've done loads of training with people, but if we look back, if it's not clear, and it's not clear that we understand their needs, and, you know, maybe that's more of a thing for line management to make sure that, as a, you know, again, the DPO relying on other parts of the organization to help fulfill this broader compliance goal, isn't it? And that's what it is. It is a group effort. Yeah. It's not as simple as the DPO has to make sure everybody knows about data protection, because that is not feasible and not necessarily true, is it? I mean, we've got to rely on other senior members, you know, the board, directors, people like IT, to further that knowledge and understanding. And again, it's why the point of culture is so important, is that, you know, if you have a strong culture especially with senior members, it has to be with senior members. And I think it has to be all of them as well. You know, I think we've seen instances where, especially in sort of some of my older casework, where certain members have less of a buy-in to data protection than others, but that can create a chink in the armor, so to speak. And people, you know, may look at that as an example. If you're a leader in the business, you are naturally an example to others. And the DPO has to rely on those people. You know, they're the closest sort of confidence in that regard, in helping push better behaviours. And again, we appreciate that. That can be quite difficult for DPOs. I don't know if you ever encountered any sort of like difficulties with like workplace cultures and like some of your customers or anything, Amber, or anything that you've experienced like that.
Luckily, all of mine are pretty good, to be fair. They all seem very keen to learn and to implement things. I think I've seen it, I suppose, in organisations I've probably worked in before, maybe, or, you know, where there wasn't really any real awareness. I think a lot of it comes from, I don't know, I suppose if you deliver training and you expect everyone to pick up everything that you're saying and to remember it, there's an issue there. I think it's always good to have some sort of like central archive, a company handbook, an intranet where if you do just need a quick, oh, what do I do in this situation? Who do I go to? They can easily sort of access that information rather than sort of feeling like, who do I go to? Or, you know, can I remember? Or maybe you misremember and you go the wrong way about something. So I think it's really important to have that. Just as general awareness as well.
No, definitely. General awareness goes a long way, doesn't it? And, you know, hopefully that's something that you'll see that we're publishing more to you guys in the coming months and stuff, you know, stuff that you can trickle down into the organization that acts as, you know, strong awareness for them, whether it's just, you know, helping them maybe identify a breach and what the steps are for that. Or little further bits, in, you know, in terms of retention and paper documents and stuff. You know, we're hoping that we can continue to sort of press out that kind of stuff and continue to help you in those kind of efforts in relation to awareness. So, you know, definitely stay tuned for that kind of stuff. I probably will update you as we go with that. I think my goal, and especially as I've taken on more of a training role, as my time in data protection has expanded, and I, you know, had more experience in different kind of things, is my goal, my ultimate goal, and I've not landed on it yet, but hopefully I do one day, and my ultimate goal is to be able to make some kind of session where it is irrefutable that I have made data protection fun and easy in some kind of way. Now, this might be an impossible task by any means, but that is my goal, and it's something that is kind of sitting with me with things like Data Privacy Day and Cyber Day. But it, you know, especially stuff with the podcast, even, you know, even the reason for this is to make data protection feel easy and you know, a little bit more fun and lighthearted for a change. And, you know, whilst I'm not suggesting that you tell all your employees to listen to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast, but you all should, and everybody else should.
If you're going to use AI for anything, use it to make your data protection training fun.
Maybe that's what it is.
To base it all off of. That's also something.
Oh, yeah, please don't use AI to make your data protection training.
I know it sounds good in the grand scheme of things, and you read it and you're like, yeah, this sounds intelligent, it must be right, but I beg people use the ICO guidance over anything.
I think it's pretty good. I know I speak so poorly of the ICO sometimes, and I'm sorry, people in the ICO. Yeah, I think I'm valid. I think I'm perfectly valid. Because I think they must hear me to some respect, because they view my LinkedIn profile sometimes. So
they can be very contradictory, I will say that. But ultimately, they are the regulator. So as long as you're doing what they say, they can't.
Well, exactly. And there's some really good stuff out there. You know, there is. Some stuff just needs a little bit of work, and we'd like to get some more stuff. But that is natural. I've not met many people who are like very fond of their regulator in anything. So maybe it's just a part and passion. I think they're really good at what they do. I do.
It's a good job. It's like herding loads of cats.
It is difficult. It is. Yeah. Interpreting the law is a difficult thing to such a degree when it is something so open to scrutiny. So there's an element of playing it safe, isn't there? You know, but some of the stuff that the European Data Protection Board have, I'm a big fan of. I'd like to see some more of that kind of stuff adopted. But you know,
the EDPB are good, to be fair. Like, I rate them.
I really like their stuff. But yeah, as I say, like, keep your sort of eyes and ears out in the future for some Data Protection Day stuff. Because as I say, I would love to make something that is fun and engaging. I have loads of weird ideas. One of them does require like actually like trying to do some kind of event that is like stupid but related to data protection, almost like a sports day for data protection. I know that sounds really daft. And maybe if I didn't, no one would turn up, but it is something that I'm thinking. It's one of many on a list, but for me, and especially for DPP, obviously our goal is to make everybody, even if you want to get into data protection, or you have some kind of responsibility in data protection that you don't want to, or you love it and you want to come down and you want to further your knowledge and you want to meet, you know, network with people that that you know are in similar fields. That's what we're hoping to do. And, you know, that's why we do stuff like the Doer events and the Stairs events. But for something like that, I want to try do something a bit special. But as I say, it may be an impossible task. It may fall proper flat. But, you know, that is one of the one things that we want to do. I'd want to do. But training is huge, and it is such a thing that I buy into. Especially, I think, you know, good training can potentially lead to new up and coming privacy professionals. You know, if people take an interest, it could lead to further buying and further assistance from the business. People nominating themselves as data champions, and that's always the ideal, right? You don't want to be sort of wrangling everybody around, trying to find your sort of data champions and stuff. And it's nice to have that trust network in the business. I think that's really important as a DPO to have people that you can trust and rely on. Helps make the hard job a little bit easier. And Joanna, you're absolutely right. I will try to utilize Cybersecurity Month and Compliance and Ethics Week in November as best as I can. But these are giant. It takes an age to get a decent idea out of my head sometimes. So we'll have to see when that actually comes out. I need help from the actual creative people in the business, which is probably not me. But Amber, we've got a couple of minutes left. Do you have any kind of like closing thoughts about training or Joanna? That would be fantastic, by the way. If you want to drop me a message or anything, that would be great. But anything in relation to training or maybe behaviours and how we can change that positively in the field of data protection?
I don't know. I think for me, I'm quite a creative person. So I'm not great with technology. I'll give myself that. But I always try and make things quite engaging, using quizzes, using visuals. I think particularly everyone learns differently. Like, we know this from school and whatever. Some people do well with just blank PowerPoints and some people are good with colours. So I think ultimately to try and make
it's the side of your brain, isn't it? That's what they say. Yeah, if you're a left-sided or a right-sided learner.
I'm a very colourful learner. Like, I think everything highlighted in colours is interesting. You need to keep me engaged like every minute. So I think trying to sort of like balance all the different types of learning. It just makes it fun for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Things in person.
Not an easy task though either, is it really?
No, it's not.
I did a course. I don't know if you'll know. I did a course on training and being a good trainer before I started sort of doing some of the training stuff. And they spoke about that. They spoke about the different sort of learning types. And basically, ultimately, what they said is they were like, you're never going to fulfill it all, but you need a good little mix. And you know, the further time you'll have to kind of like, I guess, build into being different and, you know, an element of, you know, kind of riffing and going offside the script to work with people who may learn a bit differently. Because obviously people do, you know, I'm sure you and I probably learn very differently.
From talking to people, to be honest. I think I learn the most when I have a conversation with someone, another consultant or yourself or Kate.
You find that, don't you? And I think I find that in training as well. You know, the people who are collaborating in the session and they're speaking out, they always seem to be the people who I feel like get a grasp of it, or they can help the room get a grasp of it with a really good example and just having that nice conversation back and forth. You know, no one wants a lecture, do they, really, very ever, especially if it's not an area of expertise. It's nice for it to feel like a conversation. Well, you know, maybe some people do like a lecture. Me personally, no.
I like a debate.
Yeah, so yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, something that you can go back and forth and you can understand perspectives. It's good that. Even if it's not about data protection, or it is, it's got an undertone of data protection.
Make everyone read 9 to 84. Start a book club.
Yeah, book club.
You'll get the conversations going.
Work book club. Let's get a DPP work book club. I don't read the kind of books that everybody else would be reading for book club, though. So.
That'll do.
Yeah, I won't even read that. I won't even read all my favourite books have pictures in, so
cut that bit out, Eve.
Yeah, not children books. But some children books, maybe.
Oh, you mean like manga?
I mean comics, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did think you...
The people in the podcast know. They know. I've expressed my love before of comics. So people and hopefully people know. But yeah, I mean, I think that kind of just about tail ends it for us. I think some of the key points from us are, you know, continue to support people and understand that, you know, learning is fluid and building knowledge is hard. But you know, trusting who you can. I think we spent a lot of time kind of talking about the DPO and building trust and building culture. So hopefully, I think the next couple of sessions will be a bit more about some, you know, very sort of specific elements of the law. We've got some really interesting topics coming up. Getting some new guests on the podcast. Obviously, it's always great to get different experiences and speak to people like Amber, which is, you know, really appreciate you coming on. It's always nice to get a little bit of a change from me and Kate sometimes. Maybe you wish it was the other way around and Kate was here instead of me. Apologize. I mean, most people would prefer that. So I do apologize, but Kate's always away. So you're going to
just be laughing all the time.
Exactly.
So we get a conversation.
I'm professional. What she's saying is that we can't communicate as friends, apparently. So I'll see how it is. But on that note, guys, we hope you have a lovely weekend. We'll see you next week with a GDPR radio session. I may be joined by Kate. I don't know. I can't remember if she's on leave or not, but I'll be joined by somebody. But we'll catch you all next week. Have a lovely weekend and take care.